talking about it today, so you can talk about it tomorrow.
The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
Well, that was really extraordinary. Welcome back to the show, 203-333-9422. If you're joining us right now and you missed it, we're going to post the podcast of hearing a former New Haven police chief, but now assistant Yale police chief, Anthony Campbell, talk about the loss of his brother, talk about why he became a police officer to begin with, trace what he believes to be the history and the connection between generations of racism and the violence that plagues the black and brown community, which is mostly perpetrated upon others in the black and brown community, and how there's a feeling and a statistical analysis that shows that these crimes are not prosecuted with the same vigor as crimes against white people, leading to a cycle in which people in the black and brown community feel even more worthless and powerless in their own society. And so I just thought it was very illuminating. Personally, I had what I would call a light bulb moment myself, that light bulb of insight into finally once and for all really understanding what black people are trying to tell me about the impact, the collective impact of racism and its connection to crime. And it came through Broadway musical theater, which doesn't surprise me. But that's how I got the light bulb. I got the light bulb by making the analogy of what he was saying to one of the most famous soliloquies of all time, Bill Bigelow, in Carousel, written by the great Richard Rodgers of Fairfield, Connecticut. He and Dorothy lived right here in Fairfield, Connecticut. Rodgers and Hammerstein, and the extraordinary musical Carousel, which if you've never heard, you don't even need to see it. Just hear it. The story tells itself. But it is a story of a man at his wit's end who does something violent and extreme in an effort to try and figure out a way to support his family. And from there, the story continues. And it's a love story, but it's a story with violence as well. 203-333-9422. And it's most importantly a human story, very much a human story. I don't think I've ever seen an all-black cast version of Carousel. I don't even know if I've seen a mixed race cast version of Carousel. But I think we should. Has Audra McDonald ever played Julie? She's got the pipes for it. 203-333-9422. It was typically played by a blonde ingenue like Shirley Jones. But it could be anybody. And of course, June is busting out all over up in Maine is what opens the show. It's a fantastic show. 203-333-9422. And in the next hour, we're going to actually be chatting with two gentlemen from California who were chosen to design the memorial to Sandy Hook, which is happening. It's coming to fruition. The money has been appropriated. The place has been chosen. The blueprints have been approved. It's very exciting to hear about and talk about because it's a unique vision for a memorial. And we're going to hear about it in the next hour. In the meantime, lots more other news to talk about. I have to tell you, I'm a little bit verklempt. 203-333-9422. You know what? Let's go to the phones. They've been lining up. Let's hear what you have to say. Richard from Bridgeport. Richard, welcome to the show today.
Hi, Lisa. Good morning, and thanks for taking my call. All right. So you know, I'm black. And I wasn't born here, but I'm a citizen. I came from the island, the Caribbean island. And I came here, and, you know, when my mom came here back in the 70s, you know, things were rough for her. But, she, you know, she came here, and she struggled, and she sent for her children and to make life better for us. And I think America is a country of great opportunities for so many in the world. And, you know, this is one country that you can come here with absolutely nothing and you can make it. I think the whole issue with the racism, it's a very complex one. And I fear sometimes injustice is done in us trying to overly simplify the issues. And sometimes in doing that, it causes us to really not be able to approach it in a more holistic manner. And so, for example, the issue of though there may be racism that exists, and I think racism will always exist once you have men because that's human nature. But I think that even with the police officers, you know, that sometimes they have been demonized and make it seem like defund police as if that is the answer. And I think that just only one part of the issue. You also have a class issue. Part of the old mm-hmm. issue is classism. You have
you
the
do.
Have and have not. And I do think that plays a role. I taught in a public school here in Connecticut. And what I realized is that the students who parents take an active interest in them tend to do better in school.
Absolutely. Richard, what did you teach? What did you teach, Richard?
Physics.
Physics. Okay. So you're yeah. already a smarty, smarty pants. I never even took physics. I wasn't qualified to take physics. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. It's a big gap in my education. Yep.
Yep. Well, you're a judge, so I think that's great.
Yeah, I know, but I'm missing physics. I've always been self-conscious about it because I left high school a year early, and so I would have taken physics in 12th grade, but I never took it, and I certainly couldn't take it in college because I wasn't smart enough. So I feel a little insecure on the matter of physics. But anyway, go ahead. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah. Yeah. And so while being in school, I realized that the students who have parents that are involved in their lives tend to do much better. This is an anecdotal evidence.
No, it's true. It's backed up by statistical evidence. You're 100% right. There's no substitute for individual parent involvement in the predictive outcome of a child. No substitute. That's right.
Right. And so when you look back on those factors that come into play, and when you know that parents expose their children to certain, you know, to books and to, you know, museum and things like that nature, it somewhat plays into their lives for them to really succeed. And I believe when we're just looking at it purely as a black and white brown issue, I think it missed a complete part of the equation. And I think the politician doesn't help. I believe they use it, unfortunately, to the demise of the very black people themselves. Almost like hand me down, hand out. I don't need a handout. I need to add up. And
up.
So
I hear you. Yep.
So while you are trying to give these social programs, you know, don't really help me per se. I want the opportunity to educate myself and expose me to opportunities so that I can be aware. When you look, a lot of the violence is being caused by gangs. Why would a child choose a gang over, where are their family? Where are their parents? So, and it has been going on in America for some time now where you have the broken down of families, nuclear families, father, mothers, fathers in the lives of their sons, their children. So when we fail to look at those aspects of the equation, I think we cannot come up with a true solution. And then to just paint it as pure black and white and racism, I'm not saying that there's not racism, but then for white people to feel guilty for being white, or you're going to even demonize them for being white, or they feel almost apologetic for being white, we are going back into reverse racism.
I think you're right, Rich. I think a lot of people agree with you. I think you're 100% right. I know a lot of white people are feeling blamed for being white, just as you said, and it's a bigger problem than that. But let me ask you this, Richard. Do I have the right, in your opinion? I'm a white woman. I was born into a first-generation family. My father's parents came off the boat, right? My dad was first-generation mm-hmm. American. Mm-hmm. So, and they had no education. They had an eighth-grade education in another language, but my father went to law school. He went at night. He slept on the couch, but he went. And he propelled himself into the middle class in one generation. Let me ask you this. Do I have the right as a white person to even talk about the fact that sometimes in communities of color, choices are made that aren't museums and aren't educational and maybe are the flashy, blingy stuff? Do I even have a right to ask those questions, or am I going to be deemed a racist if I even go there?
I think you have a right to ask the question. And sometimes as blacks, though, we have a different perspective, but then you just have to ask for fact finding purposes. If we're going to come to find problem or solution, the question needs to be asked, and especially you in your capacity, both as a judge and in terms of your being a radio host, I think you should ask a question. And it should not be taken as if to say, who are you? You're white. You don't understand. So, yes, you do.
Well, I think, Richard, I think, and I love what you're saying and I hear what you're saying, but I think that right now we're living in a time, right now, like this moment in time, where I don't think that white people have the right to ask these questions of the black community. I think there has been an overlying consensus that if white people ask the questions, there is a kickback and an assumption that they're making racist assumptions, and how dare they even ask the question. And this comes up on social media, on Facebook threads all the time. People have to tread very, very carefully now, Richard, because their jobs are at stake, their reputations are at stake. We're not living in a time, at least in the public time. Maybe private conversations can still be private. But public, I think people are treading very carefully because there's a lot of adverse consequences if you say things the wrong way.
But Lisa, I hear you on that, and that is so true. But then it's going to create a society of fakeness, and people must be able to be honest but loving. And the thing is about it, we don't have to. We all have prejudices. We all have biases.
We do.
And we must be honest to say, you know, we have biases. But then we should all remember that we're first human beings, no matter your color of your skin. Because when you cut yourself and I cut myself, the same color come out, blood, red.
That's right.
When we laugh, even if we speak different languages, when I laugh, speaking English, we all sound the same thing. When we cry because we hurt, we all sound the same way. So there are certain things that are common among us as human beings, and we should first understand it. And that's what Martin Luther King said. We should be judged by the contents of our heart or our character, not by the color of our skin. And yesterday we see that we are going down that very end. And when there was, even during the civil rights and even during slavery, you had a white people who fought for the ending. Not every white person was like that. And even
Richard, I have to go because my producer is whispering in my ear that if I don't go to commercial, all hell will break loose here on the Lisa Wexler Show. I'm so glad that you called. I hear your passion. I thank you for contributing to the show. I thank you for listening. I wish I had taken physics with you. Please call again, Richard. Please call again. We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show. We've got news, weather, and traffic up at the top of the hour. Stay tuned.